Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson. And this week, we talk about where things stand right now in the Statehouse, now that we are more than halfway until the end of session. We preview the $8.2 billion budget on the House floor this week, and we look at the upcoming candidate filing period, since primaries are just 3 months away. And if you didn't know about any of those things, well, listen up, because that's what we're here for. It's also a reason why we named the podcast The South Carolina Lead, spelled L-E-D-E, harkening back to the old-school spelling for the introductory section of a news story, intended to entice the reader to read the full article. Now, we hope you listen to all four sections of our podcast instead of cursing at daylight saving time for being tired and, oh, I don't know, the fact that it's called daylight saving, not daylight savings with an S. We all know that's how you say it. Everyone says daylight savings. No one says daylight saving. I just can't even today, guys. Now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories that you should know about. Number one, the state newspaper reports that 33 counties gave more than $221 million in tax breaks to companies in 2016. This is the first time that these numbers have been released publicly. Local officials say such tax breaks are needed to entice companies to locate to their counties, but critics say there's not enough transparency or accountability of these tax breaks. Number two, the Sun News reports that Stormy Daniels, who is the porn star who allegedly had a sexual encounter with President Donald Trump in 2006, packed the Dollhouse Strip Club in Myrtle Beach last Wednesday and Thursday night. She brought in 200 to 1,000 patrons, respectively. She's capitalizing on her most recent fame and making paid appearances at strip clubs across the country. You do you, girl. Last Tuesday, she did file a lawsuit against Trump to invalidate the non-disclosure agreement that she signed with him. Number three, the Post and Courier reported that Judge Carmen Mullen wrote in an order released March 7th that First Circuit Solicitor David Pascoe's comments during a heated hearing in Beaufort were, quote, impugning the character both of the court and defense counsel and casts a pall on the judicial process, especially since he was trying to overturn a plea agreement that he arranged. Pascoe was upset with Mullen previously over the light sentence of probation and community service that she issued for former Representative Rick Quinn, who was indicted as part of a corruption investigation by Pascoe. Mullen let Quinn's sentence stand, despite Pascoe's attempt to have her alter it. And number four, the Post and Courier reports that a bill to raise South Carolina's minimum high school dropout age from 17 to 18 moved out of a House subcommittee last Tuesday. That makes it one step further than the last time the proposal was introduced 2 years ago. Now, currently, South Carolina students must attend school until their 17th birthday or graduation. Proponents of the idea say it will help increase the number of high school graduates by encouraging struggling students to stick with it for another year. And a fifth quorum call item.
Ooh.
That's right, folks. You paid for four, but you're getting fived. It's called savings with an S. Now, I just wanted to let you guys know that the flu is no longer widespread in South Carolina, according to the Department of Health and Environmental Control. The flu is now considered regional, but that doesn't mean you should stop washing your hands to prevent the spread of it, especially since people are still dying. So far this season, the flu has claimed 201 lives. And just like that, we bury the lead with a fifth quorum call item. Big spendin'. Well, we are chugging into week 10 of the legislative session, and we've passed the midway point already, and May 10th, the last day of session, will be here before we know it. So to talk about all this right now, we have the Post and Courier's Columbia Bureau Chief, Andy Shane, joining us. Andy, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Gavin.
So right now, six bills have been signed into law by the governor this year, primarily local bills. House leaders have sent several bills to the Senate in an effort to fix oversight issues stemming from the VC Summer nuclear reactor project failure. The House has taken up the $8.2 billion budget this week, and plenty of bills will soon die come crossover day in less than a month. Now, on the political calendar, we have the two-week filing period for office opens this Friday, and the June 12th primaries are 3 months away. So we have a buckshot of issues here, but that's why we brought in a veteran to give us some sense of where things stand. So, Andy, let's start with the budget. House lawmakers came in on Monday this week to begin debating the budget. Now, is this the most important item that lawmakers deal with during the legislative session?
Year in and year out, yes, it is. Basically, they're trying to figure out how to spend more than $8 billion of state money that you give in your taxes and sometimes also in your fines and your fees. So they're trying to decide how best to spend it. And that's usually each year the most important thing that they have to get through. As for the listeners of this podcast, and obviously anyone who's been watching what's going on at the State House this year, it's been all about nuclear issues and the fallout from VC summer. So that's taken a lot of the oxygen out of the State House, even out of the budget process to a certain degree. I don't think as much attention has been paid to it this time around. And also, I think it means if somebody wants to do something a little special, a little different, that's probably been not on the table because no one really has any time to discuss that when they're too busy trying to figure out how to fix regulation and try to figure out how to make ratepayers whole.
Mm-hmm. So far this year, there's about $276 million in new recurring dollars available. That's additional money that will be coming in every year, $276 million, and about $166 million in one-time dollars. That's some money that typically goes towards capital improvement costs, fixed costs, and we see that some of that money, for example, $50 million will be going to improve some infrastructure at colleges across the state, one-time dollars. But then some recurring costs will be also be seen in the House budget so far this year. So the House has proposed a budget that will give teachers a 2% pay bump, send about $750 additionally to correctional officers and their paychecks. And also looks like they're going to send about $11 million to help address some of the ongoing opioid epidemic. These are all proposals at this point, right, Andy? I mean, what could happen through this week once this bill gets over to the Senate? What happens there?
Well, typically what happens is the budget starts in the House. And so the House Ways and Means Committee has approved its version of the $8.2 billion budget. And now it's on the floor. And things can change on the floor this week. They've dedicated the entire week to it. They started meeting on Monday, which is unusual. Normally they don't meet until Tuesday. And I think they would obviously be willing to meet through Friday if it means getting the budget out and over to the Senate, which, of course, then you go to the Senate. And mm-hmm. they've been running parallel meetings as well. And they're going to be able to understand a little bit of what they think ought to be in the budget. And they'll take the House bill and they'll make changes. And what's going to happen is you're going to have a negotiating committee, which is called a conference committee, that will get together and hash out the differences between the bills. And so by hopefully before May 10th, which is what's called sine die or the end of the session, they'll have a final spending plan. But most years, we go into overtime. You can go past the final day of the legislature and consider various bills. And usually, most years, it has been the budget.
I mean, do we see a drastically different budget bill usually coming out of the Senate, or do they sometimes kind of stick with what the House has sent them, Andy?
Usually, a lot of it is the same. There's usually some key points that are very different. Mm-hmm. It may be even an issue of raises. I mean, right now they're targeting raises for teachers and first responders and Department of Correction officers, mm-hmm. Such as those. So, if, for instance, the Senate said, "Nah, we want to give a raise to everybody," and we figured out a way to make the budget balanced. And by the way, let me step back. There's a requirement to balance the budget. They cannot have a deficit. Mm-hmm. So if they figure out a way to make the numbers work, to give everybody a raise in state government, more than 50,000 employees, then they'll do it. But again, mm-hmm. there's occasionally those kinds of differences. But most of the time, it's smaller issues, but there's enough of them to hammer out through this conference committee. And again, it seems like a lot of hurry up and wait that you go through the whole session. And then all of a sudden, at the end of it, you're trying to figure out how to spend a good deal of money.
And then also other bills get accumulated behind the budget. And then we're also, those bills rush through too at the end of the session as well. So right now the budget, I know we're talking about pay raises for state employees and how that really hasn't happened. But it's worth noting that at least in the House budget that they put, there's $32 million going to fix the pension liability. It's the second year of this pension situation that they're trying to remedy. $56.4 million to cover rising health benefit costs for employees. So while employees might not be getting these pay raises, they're at least, having some of this compensatory issues being taken up at the same time. So kind of switching gears a little bit, we saw last week with House leaders calling out senators over their slow movement over the VC summer bills that they've sent them, including some bills that would reduce that 18% to 19% nuclear surcharge and SCNG customers' bills that they get charged every month for the failed reactor project. Just kind of touching on this, it looks like the Senate will actually have meetings this week. One of their subcommittees will take up those bills this week. Andy, is this typical for us to see lawmaker on lawmaker action like that?
It's not atypical, especially lately. The roads issue also came to a head like this. The House felt like it had put a proposal out there, and the Senate was taking its time and also was stonewalling on some issues. And again, House Speaker Jay Lucas, like he did last week, came out and sort of called the Senate out and said, look, move on this issue. Last year, they had been talking for roads for several years, and the House felt like it had a good solution, and they felt like, to a certain degree, again, that it was being stonewalled in the Senate. Same deal with the nuclear issue, that they feel like they want to try to make ratepayers whole. Mm-hmm. And so that what they've done is attached a measure that would essentially put the rate hike, the amount of money, that 18% that we pay for nuclear, for the nuclear plant, on hold while regulators review what happened with SCNG and Santee Cooper and its handling of the nuclear plant. And that differs in the Senate bill. And we'll see sort of how that goes. I mean, it's a bill that's going to, again, have to go to one of these negotiating committees. Mm-hmm. But it's a pretty big difference when you sit here and you talk about withholding payment for what happened. And Jay Lucas was emphatic when he came out last week and said, essentially, we need to make the ratepayers whole, that we need to move forward with this, and basically called the Senate out on this issue. He is from the PD, so is Hugh Leatherman, the head of the Senate. So it's interesting that you have two lawmakers who don't live very far away from each other, mm-hmm. having their differences at this point on this issue. So that's really going to be coming to a head fairly soon, and one way or another, because the House and the Senate do need to agree that the review needs to take longer than, say, the summer, to make sure that we get the sort of the best result, make sure that there's time for regulators to study this and figure out what they really need to do next.
And kind of looking forward at these bills as well, they don't necessarily have to go into a post-sign-and-die situation. However, we keep hearing, it's likely that that will happen. But the main thing that these bills have on their side is that they've already kind of crossed over. And that's kind of a term there for one bill getting out of the House and or Senate. They make it over to the other chamber. And you really need that done, especially before about a month before the last day of session, which is what we call crossover day, which will be April 10th this year. So, Andy, can you tell me a little bit about the whole crossover process, generally speaking, and what happens to bills that don't make it over?
Essentially, you have this deadline, and as you said, it's April 10th, where a bill has to pass one of the chambers in order to be considered before sign-e-die or mm-hmm. before the end of the session on May 10th. So there's going to be a rush come April 10th to have bills passed so they cross over. Does that mean that they're going to get passed by the other chamber? Usually not. Mm-hmm. There's no guarantees unless it's something that they both want to do. And for the most part, bills that people want have already crossed over, and it's just a matter of maybe hashing out differences or holding hearings in that other chamber to move them forward, to get them to the governor's desk or to kill them, if that's the case. An example of that would be like the personhood bill.
Yeah.
Where there was a lot of interest in that. But the other thing is that even though crossover seems to be sort of this dun-dun-dun kind of day,
yeah.
there are ways to put things that may not have crossed over into bills, or if issues crop up, there you can always – if you make sure it's germane, as they say, to a bill, you can always add something to it, or you can always try to find a way to put it into the budget as what they call a proviso, or in another way of putting it into the budget if it ends up being that way. So it doesn't necessarily mean something is dead if it hasn't crossed over, but it's a lot tougher.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other thing is that there have been a number of bills that have passed one chamber and maybe not passed the other. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure to see, as I said, sort of fish or cut bait on those.
Yeah, and that last month does become kind of a mad rush there, and even the last day can be somewhat intense with the pace of things, and you quickly see a lot of bills that you maybe been keeping your eye on all of a sudden get this movement through. But the difference this year is that if they don't get done on the last day, then they are done. Then we start a new session next year. It's a 2-year session, so that's why we had some bills that got carried over from last year that are still moving their way through the process. But you know, come May 10th, if they're not passed, they're done for. So
you have to start over again next year. And there are a lot of bills that have become laws that did that. You basically went through several 2-year cycles, and eventually, and either you get change in the state house, or you maybe make tweaks to the bill to make it more palatable for folks to pass.
Switching to fresher starts, in a sense, and looking towards having another session, we have filing coming up beginning this Friday for 2 weeks. That's when candidates for the House of Representatives in the State House, the House in Congress, and other offices, the governor, the gubernatorial race, everyone has to start their filing. They have to put in, say that they're running. So come March 30th, we know what the field is for all these different races and who is actually running. Andy, I know you've been following this. I just want to see maybe if you want to give me a quick take on what some of the hottest primaries might be in terms of, I mean, the governor's race is obviously where we've all been kind of focusing our attention, but a little bit of that race and maybe any of these congressional races that you think might be really heating up.
Well, you know, in obviously the governor's race is the big one. We have 8 folks, 5 Republicans and 3 Democrats who have said they intend to run. Again, come March 16th through March 30th, this is when they actually have to put you know, where rubber meets the road as far as being official about it. I don't have any indication that anyone isn't going to file who has already sort of expressed interest, but again, you sometimes get interested. The other part of it too is if you just get a wild hair, somebody who comes out of the woodwork can always come out and do that. So I think we know pretty much what we have in the governor's race. I think the attorney general's race is going to just be interesting. That's just Alan Wilson has at least so far 2 challengers on the Republican side. Another race that's just, you know, you basically never really pay attention to it is the Secretary of State race, which seems to be attracting, I believe, 2 or 3 other challengers to Secretary of State Mark Hammond. The Secretary of State's main job is to oversee corporate filings, charity filings, and affix the seal to a whole bunch of things. So the official state seal, which he neglected to do, and technically meant that laws weren't valid, even though they really the decisions said they were. But it was a sign that maybe some folks saw that it was time for a change, and I think some people are seeing that as a stepping stone. In the congressional races, I think it's fair to say the 2 most interesting races are number 1 in the upstate for Trey Gowdy's seat. Trey Gowdy has announced that he's not running again, and that pretty much has brought every major Republican who lives within his district is going to run for his seat, and that's going to be, I think, really the one to watch. Finally, the other race I think that'll be of interest is just in the first, which is Mark Sanford's seat. He's got a sort of an aggressive challenger in Representative Katie Arrington. It'll be interesting to see if she can cause any damage. You know, Sanford's been surprisingly very popular post Appalachian Trail,
and the 5th congressional district too. Ralph Norman, Archie Parnell.
I mean, it's very good point.
And because that's one, maybe, and I don't know how confident I guess when we look at this shift, this attempt to try and get this blue wave going in South Carolina. I mean, it's not going to happen in the state house, and it's not going to necessarily happen in these congressional districts. However, if there's one that might be the closest to having some color of a blue, only because we saw Archie Parnell, who's a Democrat, in that special election last year for Mulvaney's seat, got within 3 points of Ralph Norman, who eventually the Republican who became our newest congressman up there.
But I think it'll be interesting because that was a special election.
Yeah.
That brings out a smaller group of folks, much smaller group of folks than what you're going to get on June 12th. And you know, you're going to have a lot of people coming out just hitting straight tickets, R's and D's. And I just think they're, unfortunately, you know, due to gerrymandering, there's not much purple out there in our state. And so I think it's going to be, in this case, it's going to be a little different.
Well, the primaries are June 12th, and that's about 3 months away from now. So a lot of things will be happening over the next 3 months, especially at the State House, on the campaign trail, and just all throughout South Carolina. So most definitely continue to read the Post and Courier, where Andy Shane works as the Columbia Bureau Chief, and listen to South Carolina Public Radio and the South Carolina Lead podcast, where we give you the insight that you need to know to be informed about what's going on politically in South Carolina. Andy Shane, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the Old Dusty Campaign Trail, where I bring you up to speed on news regarding statewide political campaign activity. And this week, we are looking at the filing period. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Gavin, didn't you just mention this during the South Carolina Lead? or Gavin, did you just mention this during the discussion with Andy? I hear y'all. I hear ya. This is the time when the rubber is meeting the road for this campaign year. For example, 124 seats in the state House of Representatives are up for election this year. But do you know who your representative is? Were they indicted? Did they have to get their seat filled in a special election? Have they been up there for 20 years? You can find all this out at scstatehouse.gov. Now, these men and women represent you in the state house, and it's your job to hold them accountable. Chances are they, along with any potential challengers, will be knocking on your door someday soon, or sending you mailers in the mail, or possibly even advertising on the radio or television. But they're not the only ones that are running this year. There are also 7 seats for the U.S. House of Representatives up for election this year. Also, the governor's race, there are currently 5 Republicans and 3 Democrats who intend to file for this race. Do you know any of them? Have you followed any of the campaign news? Because it's been one of the most talked about races so far this year, and it will only get more and more intense as we get closer to the June 12th primaries. And then there are the constitutional officers, such as the Attorney General, the Superintendent of Education, the Treasurer, the Secretary of State, the Commissioner of Agriculture, and the Comptroller General. And then, of course, at your local level, there are city, county, and even some solicitor races that you should be aware of. All these people will be registering over the next 2 weeks, starting on Friday. So we're going to find out who's going to be running, how many candidates are going to be on the ticket, and what the primaries are going to be looking like if any of these people need to have primary races, because not everyone will have to be part of the primary process. But these 3 months will be the most important time for you to be paying attention to these races, to these candidates. And like I said, we'll find out who these candidates are over the next 2 weeks. Now, that sounds like a lot of homework to do. But here's a tip. You can read my notes every Tuesday on the South Carolina Lead just by listening, because we'll be talking about all the big races that matter. But it's going to be up to you to find out all those little ones that also matter to you. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government, named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know the difference between a resolution, a bill, and an act? Well, you're about to find out. A resolution only affects the action of one legislative body. It's read once, adopted, and not sent to the other chamber. A concurrent resolution affects the action of the entire General Assembly, but can't be a spending bill and doesn't have the force of law. It merely records the sense of the bodies. So not too big of a deal. A joint resolution has the same force of law as an act, but is temporary. It requires the same process as a bill. And a bill is a measure introduced in either body, the House or the Senate, and is designed to become a law. It must be read and adopted 3 times on 3 separate days in each body. And an act is the final product and is the term applied to a bill that's cleared the House and Senate. It's been ratified and signed by the governor or passed over by his veto. And that's just for some context, so you have an idea of how many bills and resolutions and joint resolutions go before the state house in a given 2-year legislative session. We look back at 2015 and 2016, where 1,586 bills were filed. Now, out of those, 178 made it into law. We won't have a tally on how many bills were introduced during the current 2-year legislative session, or how many make it into law until session ends, which is on May 10th. The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Watch my State House video recaps every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, live at 7 p.m. on SCETV's Facebook page, our YouTube page, and my Twitter account at Gavin Jackson. Also, read the State House Daybook on scetv.org every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday to find out what's going on at the State House. And listen to coverage on South Carolina Public Radio. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find podcasts. Find SC Lead Pod on Instagram, where we post photos from the studio and from around the State House. Email us questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on March 12th, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.